So, yeah, we went out again a couple times. I figured he'd seen me at my worst and he stuck around. The least I could do was to give it a real shot. I mean, that's what people do, isn't it? They find a decent, good-looking man who doesn't judge them and treats them like a princess. They realize how lucky they are and they never let go. Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
I wish I could offer a piece of wisdom. Sadly, romance is not an art form I have ever mastered. As unsuccessful as your attempts at relationships may have been, you are still the expert in this room. Is there something about Mr. Mitchell that you find off-putting?
No, nothing. There's nothing. If I could describe the perfect man, all the qualities I'm looking for in someone, it wouldn't be too far off from Mitchell. He's a bit clingy at times, but overall, he's great company. I love the way he looks at me. I like seeing myself through his eyes. I don't know. Maybe it's me I can't stand. Maybe I don't like the effect I have on him. How he loses himself when I'm around.
Would you prefer he paid less attention to you?
We spend every minute of every day alone in a space the size of my bedroom. There's no one else he could pay attention to. I can't put it into words. I wish I didn't feel like everything was about me. Then again, I'd probably find him too distant. Maybe I'm just nuts.
Did you sleep with him again?
Does it really matter? I tried to make it work. Deep down, I knew it wouldn't take, but I tried. I never stopped, really. I was still trying. Then the unthinkable happened.
What do you mean?
The end of the world. Stars falling from the sky. Mitchell and I spend most of our time alone in the sphere, but once in a while, someone will come up for a few minutes. The techs will come up to check the equipment. Dr. Franklin likes to climb in once a day just to say hello. We're always pretty happy to see other faces. Vincent is our most frequent visitor. He comes into the sphere a couple times a day to look at the console. We usually take a break to chat.
What do you talk about?
Anything and everything. Work, sports, the weather. That time he walked us through the number symbols while he was there. Did he show you how the numbers work? It's insane. I just can't wrap my head around it. Anyway, it was late. We were all really tired, and we started joking around, showing Vincent how the controls worked. Ryan was doing the moonwalk with the robot. I was doing disco moves on my station. We were all watching it on the computer screens. We were having a really good time. The helmet was just sitting there. We were laughing so hard we didn't even notice when he reached for it.
Who did? Mr. Couture?
Yes. He put it on. Then he fell to his knees and screamed. It was all happening in slow motion. We just stood there. Ryan looked at me and we both knew what had just happened. We knew everything had changed. After what seemed like an eternity, we got out of our braces and we helped him up and out of the sphere. Dr. Franklin kept asking, "What happened? What happened?" Neither of us could get the words out.
What happened?
Ryan was out. That's what happened. Everything he had, all he had worked for, gone, just like that. I've seen men die in combat, but I'd never seen anyone lose everything in one instant and have to live with it. I wish I could have held him in my arms at that very moment, told him everything was going to be all right, but we had to take care of Vincent.
Why do you think the helmet turned on for Vincent and not for anyone else?
Hell if I know. DNA, brain configuration, fate, the universe having a very sick sense of humor. He spent a couple days in bed. He actually listened and kept his bandages on the whole time. When he came back, the station turned on for him, as we all expected. The console lit up as well. Dr. Franklin couldn't hide how thrilled she was, despite her best efforts. Who could blame her? She'd been hoping for this for so long. Once the helmet activated, I could see the leg movements on my hologram. There was another small hologram on the console, just like mine. Of course, Vincent's legs didn't fit the controls any more than Ryan's did, so the hologram didn't help much. He had to face away from it, just like Ryan. And just like Ryan, he couldn't get the leg movements right. But Vincent wasn't nearly in as good a shape as Ryan. I wish I could say we were back to square one. Vincent had to learn everything from scratch. Seeing the legs move on my hologram helped a little, but we still had to call out every movement. It was...
discouraging.
You got that right. It took Ryan and me close to 6 months to get the hang of it. And we had to do it all over again with someone who ran out of breath after 5 minutes. Ryan was very gentlemanly about the whole thing. He took Vincent under his wing and taught him every move 1,000 times over. Vincent also went into this with the best of attitudes, considering. He knew he was taking Ryan's place, and he was reminded of it every day, having him as a coach. He knew he was slowing us down as well. He hit the gym real hard, lifting weights every night after we left, but you can't make up for years of military training in a few weeks. Ryan had them build a replica of the leg controls. For 3 months, he worked side by side with Vincent, having him shadow every movement he made. Slowly but surely, Vincent began to get it right. For only a step or two at first, then for minutes at a time. After a while, Ryan was mostly encouraging him, pointing out a few mistakes here and there. I could tell he was beginning to feel useless. I became much tougher on Vincent, doing my best to make him look as bad as I could so Ryan would have something to work on. But that was only the half of it. Vincent and I couldn't help but get along. We always made each other laugh, and this was no different. Working in the sphere, it does something to people. Ryan looks like an underwear model, but Vincent and I, we have chemistry. Soon, Ryan began to feel like a fifth wheel. It was horrible to watch. He was losing the most exciting job of his life and losing me at the same time. He had front row seats to watch me grow closer to Vincent. What's worse is he was asked to play a part in it. Vincent's not a good man by any standard definition. He's not evil or anything, but he's self-absorbed. He has an ego the size of New England, and he's not particularly nice to people. He actually says he doesn't like people. He's a genius, but he's a bad person. I know, because I was attracted to him, and it was obvious it ran both ways. After a while, you had to cut through the sexual tension in the room. Maybe it was because we both knew it was the worst thing we could do. Maybe having Ryan in the room made it all the more forbidden. All I can tell you is that it was palpable. I did my best to ignore it. I even asked Ryan out a few more times. He wouldn't sleep with me. He couldn't stand the idea. It might have been out of pity.
Was it?
Ryan began leaving the sphere early. Dr. Franklin eventually found him some work in the lab to keep his mind at ease. I don't think he could stand being in the same room with me anymore. I feel terrible for saying it, but I was beginning to resent him for giving up. It's awful, I know, since I didn't think we had a future together, but part of me wanted him to fight. For his job, for me, for anything. One night, Vincent and I were working late. Ryan had left early, and we had just heard Dr. Franklin close the door on her way out. We listened to the silence for a few moments, waiting for the inevitable. Vincent got out of his station and climbed up to mine. He smiled and slowly moved in front of me. I was still braced in, my arms stretched out in the control suit. He undid my belt, took off my pants, and wrapped my legs around him. He didn't say anything, not a single word. He just stared at me the whole time. It was... never mind. We locked the lab behind us and walked out through the exit in the maintenance building. I followed Vincent outside. Two blinding lights appeared out of nowhere. I was still covering my eyes when Vincent shoved me back inside as hard as he could. I hit the ground pretty hard and knocked my head on the stairwell ramp. There was a loud bang that shook the whole building. When I got out to see what had happened, Ryan was still in his truck, both hands on the wheel, The front end had embedded itself about a foot into the cement wall. Vincent was lying face down on the hood of the truck, his legs crushed into the wall.
Part 3. Headhunting. File number 120. Interview with Vincent Couture, Senior Intelligence Advisor, DCIPS. Location, Hospital for Special Surgery, HSS, New York, New York.
I remember going to the zoo with my father. I must have been 5 or 6 years old. It was a good hour from Montreal, and my dad didn't like to drive. He also didn't like crowds. But I had been begging my parents in the middle of the winter, and my mom finally convinced my dad to take me. I was so excited. It's all I could talk about. Will there be lions? Will there be zebras? I don't know, son. You'll just have to wait and see. We finally left on a sunny Sunday morning. My father gave me a present for the ride. It was one of those wooden puzzles, just a cube made of small indented pieces of wood that only fit in a particular way. I remember thinking it was really pretty. My father, of course, insisted I take it apart and put it back together on our way to the zoo. "You have an hour," he said. "That should be plenty of time." Well, it wasn't. I was still working on it when I saw the giant zoo sign. Of course, I immediately put the puzzle back into the box it came in, and I started naming every animal I could see on the signs. "Look, Dad, a zebra!" He said, "Great, finish your puzzle, then we'll go." I said I didn't want to, but he reminded me that in our family, when we start something, we see it through to the end. I worked on that thing for another 2 hours while he read a book. I could almost make the whole cube, but in the end, I would inevitably end up with one or two pieces that didn't fit. I knew I must have put a couple of pieces in the wrong place, but there were just too many, and I couldn't remember what I did the next time around. I kept doing the same thing over and over again. By noon, frustration had turned to despair. I started crying. My father just kept on reading. I couldn't think anymore. I was shaking, frantically jamming pieces together. By 2 o'clock, I was just hysterical. My father put his book away. He started the car and drove straight home. We didn't talk for the rest of the day. After my mother tucked me in, he came into my room and told me I had learned a valuable lesson that day, much more valuable than seeing some caged animals.
What was the lesson you learned?
I suppose he meant that emotions get in the way of judgment, that I might have succeeded had I not been so eager to do something else.
You must have been an exceptionally smart child. This would seem difficult to grasp for a 5-year-old.
Oh, I am saying this now. I had absolutely no idea what he meant at the time. I just wanted to see the zebras. My father was a philosopher, literally. I mean, he was a philosophy professor. We didn't always get along once I got older, but I worshipped him when I was a kid.
What did your mother do?
She was a teacher, too, until she met my father. She gave up her career when I was born. She was a really smart woman, but her heart was bigger than anything else. She wanted me to play sports, to spend some time with other kids my age, but my dad thought it was a waste of time. He said I was born with a brain that worked better than most, that it would be a shame not to use my gift. He didn't think I could do that, throwing a ball with a bunch of halfwits. My mother insisted, but I told her I didn't want to. I loved my dad. I did everything I could to make him proud. It must have driven my mother crazy. She left us eventually. We were both crushed. I don't know why it came as such a surprise. It wasn't hard to see that one coming. Any woman in her right mind would have dropped that selfish, egotistic man in a heartbeat. She probably just found some half-decent guy who paid a modicum of attention to her every now and then. I know she didn't leave because of me, but I think she might have stayed had I not ignored her as much as my father did. I was so bent on pleasing him. At times, she must have felt like she didn't even exist. She wasn't a cynical woman, not for a second. This would probably just make her really sad. But you can bet the irony wouldn't be lost on my dad.
The irony?
Oh, yes. I worked all my life at being the smartest I could be. My dad always told me I could make a real difference someday. Most people don't really have a purpose, a sense of purpose anyway, beyond their immediate surroundings. They're important to their family, but it doesn't go much beyond that. Everyone is replaceable at work. Friendships come and go. I had the chance to be a part of something much larger than me. But it's not because of how much I learned or how smart I am. The one thing that made me special, what made me truly useful, turned out to be my legs. And now I'm about to lose them both.
What makes you think you will lose your legs?
The doctor left a few minutes before you walked in. He said there's no choice but to amputate both legs.
I do not wish to appear insensitive, but you seem to be handling the news fairly well.
I spend most of my time sitting down thinking, really. That's what I'm good at, sitting and thinking. I figure so long as I can do that. I never paid much attention to my body. Didn't eat that well, didn't exercise much, didn't play sports. I do think I'll miss walking. Walking was good.
Is that all you're feeling?
What do you want me to say? Life is unfair. I didn't deserve this. In the grand scheme of things, I don't think what I'm feeling is all that important. If you can't get the controls to work for someone else, then it's all over for everybody. Putting that helmet on was a really stupid idea.
Guilt is a normal feeling. Some form of resentment would also seem appropriate.
I'm heartbroken about losing all of this, if that's what you want to hear. I mean, who wouldn't be? I don't know why, but I keep thinking of that astronaut who got grounded 72 hours before liftoff because he was exposed to the... how do you say, rougeole?
The measles. You are referring to Thomas Kenneth Mattingly II.
That's him. I can never remember his name. I'm sure he was pissed. I'm sorry if I'm not devastated enough for you. To be honest, I was pretty sure it was all over when I saw that truck coming. Everything just went dark. How's Kara, by the way? She must be pretty shook up.
She's doing fine. She feels responsible, but she will be okay. She would have come, but...
No, she wouldn't have.
Perhaps. But she is genuinely grateful. You might have saved her life. She said to tell you to hurry up and get back home.
Ryan?
There is not much I can tell you. He has been reluctant to speak at all. He is being held at Fort Carson. Have no fear, Mr. Couture. He will pay for what he did to you.
What good would that do? I many things. Vindictive isn't one of them. I can't imagine how he must feel.
Love makes people do some crazy things.
Nah. Love makes you get really drunk and punch through a wall. That man had everything he cared about taken away from him. Everything. I did that. I didn't do it on purpose, but I'm the one who turned his world upside down. Not so Captain America after all, I guess. I didn't think he had it in him. I'm sorry, I'm not laughing because of that.
You find it humorous that Mr. Mitchell is losing his mind?
No. That it's you sitting by my bed. Not my family, not my friends, not that I have many, not Kara or Rose, you. Mr. Warm and Fuzzy. It's like waking up from a coma and having the cashier at the grocery store at your bedside. No offense.
None taken.
I guess that's what they meant when they said to be nice to people. No tears for the narcissistic Quebecois.
I doubt that people would be lining up by the hundreds, but in the interest of fairness... No one knows where you are.
You know, I get that you don't want to tell people your name, but wouldn't it be easier to make one up? Something cool, Charlie M, anything. Then again, maybe you're better off without one. What's in a name? He said.
So Romeo would, were he not Romeo called, retain that dear perfection which he owes without that title.
An educated man. Somehow you didn't strike me as the literary type.
English literature. Magna cum laude.
Ooh, please do tell.
I think not. But if it makes you feel special, the president does not know this much about me. Did you know we are only missing three pieces? We found both of the small thigh pieces in China, about 10 miles from each other. We should have the other parts soon. We have covered about 80% of the globe.
Good for you. I just hope they're on land.
What do you mean?
Well, 70% of the planet is covered by water. When you're done surveying every continent, you'll have gone through about 30% of the Earth's surface.
Dr. Franklin believes...
What Rose said. She thinks they desperately want us to find these things. But did you notice we keep finding them in the middle of nowhere? We got almost half of them in the United States. Do you know what was in the U.S. 3,000 years ago? Not much. The Arctic isn't the most convenient place to look for things either.
If I did not know you better, I would be tempted to call you a pessimist, Mr. Couture. Let us worry about that. You concentrate on getting back on 2 feet.
Funny. An hour from now, I won't have any feet to get back on. I just need to figure out how to work a wheelchair. It can't be that hard. I've seen some really stupid people in wheelchairs. And I'll worry about whatever I want. I think I have plenty of time to do that. I always wanted to learn Cantonese. I just never found the time.
I want you to listen to me very carefully. No one will take your legs. You may not believe in fate, but there is a reason the robot chose you. It is what you were meant to do. It will take some time, but you will get back into that sphere and make that robot walk. You will make us all proud. And you need to get back to Chief Resnick.
Where do you get this stuff? They'll still take my legs, but that was a nice speech. And you know as well as I do, Kara and I are over.
I do not think she is the type of person who would abandon you because of a handicap.
I know that. She's as loyal as a dog. That doesn't sound so nice when you say it out loud. Anyway, that's my point. She'd be with me for all the wrong reasons. She'd be unhappy, but she'd stick around out of some twisted, misplaced sense of duty.
What makes you think she would be unhappy?
They're cutting my legs. I won't be able to walk. I won't be able to stand to get food out of the top shelf. I'll need help taking a bath. I'll probably soil myself. I'm already cynical. I don't think this will suddenly turn me into a ray of sunshine. I wouldn't want to live with me. I wouldn't wish that on anyone, especially Kara. She should be with someone she can be proud of. Last thing she needs is changing diapers.
Did you know that Ken Mattingly never contracted the measles? He did fly to the moon on Apollo 16, and later took part in 2 space shuttle missions. No one will take your legs, Mr. Couture. I give you my word.
File number 121. Interview with Dr. Pavel Haas, Chief of Surgery. Location, Hospital for Special Surgery, HSS, New York, New York.
How is Mr. Couture doing?
His femur, tibia and fibula are broken in several places on both legs. He has no patella to speak of on either leg. His knees have just been obliterated. There's nothing but small fragments piercing through his flesh like shrapnel. To put it mildly, his legs are gone.
He is under the impression that you will cut them away.
He's right. They're prepping the OR as we speak. We'll take him upstairs as soon as we are done here. We'll cut his legs about midway to the knee. There should be enough left to attach prosthetics, if we're lucky. It will take some time, but most patients in his situation eventually learn to walk again. I know it sounds terrible right now, but you have to believe me when I tell you this is what's best for him.
That is more or less what he told me. I am sorry to tell you that an amputation is out of the question.
I don't want to be rude, but this really isn't up to you.
How I wish that were true. Unfortunately, there are a great many things that fall under my responsibility, and this happens to be one of them. I can see your mouth opening slightly, which would suggest that you are waiting for the first opportunity to interrupt me, so I will save you the time and give you the only justification you are going to get. That man is in a unique position to do something remarkably important for this country, if not for mankind. More to the point, he is the only one who can. and he needs his legs to do it. I apologize if this is more succinct than what you were hoping for, but it will have to do under the circumstances. Please do not interrupt. I understand you are in a position of authority, and the nature of your work probably makes you unaccustomed to being contradicted. But if what I have been told is true, we do not have a lot of time before sepsis sets in, so I hope you will forgive me for being blunt. If you insist on pursuing this course of action, these two men will escort you out of the building and drive you away. I do not want you to think I am threatening you. You will not be killed, and no one will inflict physical pain upon you. You will, however, wake up in a strange room and never see the outside of it for the remainder of your life. I just want you to have all the facts, so you can make an informed decision. Unfortunately, you will need to make that decision in the next 30 seconds.
I don't know how I am supposed to answer that.
You do not have to answer. You just have to do exactly as I say. I was told you are the best at what you do. That is why we flew him here. That is why we chose you. It will take me about 10 minutes to get someone almost as good to replace you, but I really hate having to settle for second best.
You don't understand. I can't salvage any of the bones. Not me, not anyone else. It's not a matter of will, and threatening me won't change anything. I can't wish his bones back together. And I can't just make him new legs out of thin air.
Sure you can. You wrote several papers on titanium implants, and you have the highest success rate in titanium total hip replacements. You may or may not lack some of the mechanical engineering skills to create implants of this size, but we can remedy the situation with one phone call. I believe you already have all the equipment you need, but if you require anything else, I will have it flown here within the hour. You will enjoy unlimited funding, and you may use any and all of the resources of the United States Army, the NIH, the NSF, NASA, as well as those of agencies you have never heard of. If you require anything, simply call this number and mention your name. Someone will make sure that you get all you need. It is vital that you realize the colossal amount of resources at your disposal. I would not want this experiment to fail because you assumed certain technologies did not exist or that certain materials were unobtainable. Right now, at this very moment, you are the most powerful person in the medical field on the planet.
We'd have to replace every single bone in his legs. Basically, we'd be inserting whole mechanical legs inside his tissue. It's never been done. There's a reason for that. The human body is hostile to foreign objects. I'm not even sure we could salvage enough muscle for them to be functional, but his body would absolutely reject such a large implant. I can guarantee it. We'll just end up killing him.
That is precisely what I was talking about. You need to understand how much you do not know. And you need to understand it very quickly. In about 20 minutes, you will receive a call from someone at the U.S. Army Medical Research and Materiel Command. They will provide you with a new immunosuppressive agent they've been working on. That should help him accept his new legs. They will also send a muscle-building agent that will...
I can't inject a patient with something I know nothing about.
It is a myostatin inhibitor, much more efficient than anything else you may have read about. I am confident it will come with some sort of label. They tell me it works wonders on mice. Do not waste precious time pretending. We both know you are as curious as I am to see it work. You will get to use experimental drugs the FDA will not even hear about for another decade.
You obviously don't care about my opinion, but I want to make sure you understand. He could live a very productive life with prosthetics if we amputate now.
He will live an astoundingly productive life after you build him new legs.
I need to think about this.
You do not. You made up your mind about 20 seconds ago. You see, Dr. Haas, our jobs are not that different. We analyze the situation. We gather as much data as we can before we take action. And we try to anticipate every possible outcome. I did my job as thoroughly as I hope you will do yours. You gained a tremendous amount of the knowledge we are now asking you to use during two extensive studies funded with corporate money. One on tapered titanium cementless total hip replacement, and the other on tissue response in failed titanium implants. In 2006, two of the patients participating in your hip replacement study rejected their implants. One of them died of complications. Interestingly, there is absolutely no trace of these two patients in any of your grant proposals or in any of your publications. Somehow, however, their data show up in a tissue response study they never took part in. You switched the patients from one study to the next as if nothing ever happened. No harm, no foul. Except for a dead patient.
That woman had a heart condition she didn't tell me about. I would never have chosen her for this study had she not lied in her application.
I have no doubt. Putting her in your report would not have saved her. You just made the preliminary results look this much better to the people paying for it. More to the point, when you immigrated to this country, you also neglected to declare that you were arrested for driving under the influence. I realize it is only a misdemeanor in the United States, but it is a criminal offense where you come from. You are egotistic enough to believe that the rules do not really apply to you, that these little white lies serve the greater good, and that you were actually helping others. It is not uncommon with people of your background.
My background?
Raised in precarious conditions by a poor family with traditional values. First one in the family to get a college education. First to rise out of poverty. It sounds cliché, I know, but we have become very proficient at this sort of profiling. One thing is certain. You are a survivor, Dr. Haas. You are definitely not one to throw away your life, your family, and your career for something as petty as principles. When you leave this room, you will make sure that enough of the remaining living tissue in Mr. Couture's legs is preserved while you construct his new bones.
If we do this, and by some miracle it works, I can guarantee he'll wish he had died on the operating table. He'll beg for us to end his life. You simply can't imagine the amount of pain he'll have to suffer. Every minute of every day will be the worst of his life. Will you be the one to tell him that?
I would rather not. That is a horrible thing to tell anyone, especially before life-threatening reconstructive surgery. Will he suffer any less if we tell him that he will?
No, he will go through hell no matter what. If he doesn't die first.
Then I see no reason to tell. I want him in as good a mental state as humanly possible. I want you to tell him everything will be fine.
I want the record to show that this procedure is being done against medical advice and that I am participating under duress.
I am recording this conversation, so anything we have said so far is on the recording. You may call this a record, if you wish. If you were referring to the hospital records, then no. This is your idea, and yours alone. You are performing this surgery because you firmly believe this is the best solution for your patient, and you have every confidence in its success. There will be no reference to this conversation in any form whatsoever. Let me be abundantly clear on this. Any mention of my presence, of my very existence, to anyone will have dire consequences for both you and your loved ones.
What kind of consequences?
I have not yet had time to ponder an appropriate response, but I can guarantee that you will never see your children again, even if the operation is successful.
What if it isn't?
Then you will almost certainly lose your medical license.
No, I won't say anything. But what if the patient doesn't survive? What are you threatening me with?
Why would I threaten you if you do exactly as I ask? I am not evil, Dr. Haas. That said, you will most likely lose your medical license, along with your house, your car, and everything you own. I would expect some jail time. You are about to perform absurdly complex, insanely risky, and completely unnecessary experimental surgery on a stable patient without his knowledge or consent. What do you think will happen if he dies? Before you go, I also want you to take a look at these designs. You will need to integrate them into your leg structure.
What are they?
Knees.
I'm not a mechanical engineer, but it looks like they...
Yes, Dr. Haas. They do.
File number 126. Interview with Alyssa Papantoniou, PhD, geneticist. Location, Denver Public Library, Civic Center Park, Denver, Colorado.
It is an interesting accent you have, Miss Papantoniou. Is that from the Balkans?
Yes, most of Greece is in the Balkans.
You must be from a region I have not visited. It is very unique.
Thank you. I'm curious to know why we're meeting at the public library. I'm sorry. I get nervous when I talk to people.
There is no need to apologize. I did not want us to be disturbed. It is a pleasure to make your acquaintance.
The pleasure is mine. What did you want to discuss?
It has come to my attention that you disapprove of the direction this project is taking. I would be remiss if I did not take such complaints seriously, especially coming from someone of your intelligence.
Thank you very much. I didn't mean to go over your head.
So it was an accident? Does not matter. Now, tell me, what is it that you find so objectionable in the way that Dr. Franklin is leading her team?
I have all the respect in the world for Dr. Franklin. She's a very good physicist.
But?
But she does make mistakes. She's not as brilliant as you think she is. I often find it necessary to double-check her calculations.
I am certain she appreciates.
More than anything, Dr. Franklin is too fragile. She lets her feelings for the members of her team cloud her judgment. She treats Kara and Vincent as if they were her children. Kara is a stubborn, unyielding person, and I feel it is irresponsible to rely entirely on her goodwill for this project to move forward. I have requested on several occasions that she submit to a series of tests to determine why the helmet will only activate for her, and Dr. Franklin has systematically refused.
Is that statement really accurate? I was told that Ms. Resnick submitted a saliva sample and that you performed an analysis of that sample. In fact, I remember seeing a report in which you conclude that there is nothing out of the ordinary about her genetics.
I did perform some genetic and biochemical tests and found no chromosomal anomalies, nor any obvious mutation. But there are a lot more tests. Mitochondrial analysis. I haven't even done a full genome sequencing. I could study her brain structure. Her eyes might also be the answer.
Dr. Franklin also performed a retina scan, if I'm not mistaken.
I meant that I could study a sample of her eye, not a picture of it.
Could these other procedures wait until we have recovered all the pieces from the robot and solved our more immediate problems?
You don't understand. It's not just Kara. We can't move forward without Vincent now. What if he doesn't survive? What if he can't walk again? Understanding why the helmet worked for Kara might be the key to replacing Vincent as well. With all due respect, there is too much at stake here to worry about personal feelings or some mild discomfort while I insert a needle into someone's eye. I thought you, of all people, would...
You thought I, of all people...
I thought you were... pragmatic, that you understood what needed to be done. Maybe you've also become emotionally attached.
Are you questioning my judgment?
Let me ask you this. If we needed dogs, and not humans, to control this machine, would we not already have a dozen puppies to spare?
Puppies. I find the question as a lot more interesting than any answer I could provide. But thank you for shedding new light on the situation. I have found your comments both insightful and interesting. And I promise you, I will take everything you said under advisement.
Thank you. That's all I ask.
Good day, Miss Papantonio.
File number 129. Interview with Robert Woodhull, Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs. Location, White House, Washington, D.C.
What can I do for you, Robert?
SecDef has moved us to DEFCON 3.
The Russians?
Amongst others. The Chinese spotted us leaving their territory. They've lodged a formal complaint with the U.N.
Since when do you care about the U.N.?
I couldn't care less about the U.N., but the Russians were all ears. They put two and two together very quickly. They still don't know what we're after, but they know it's not just some ancient artifact if we're willing to enter every country uninvited to get it. The Turkish government also made your little visit known to the Russians, which didn't do anything to help. They are now blaming us, officially that is, for the death of their soldiers in Siberia. They are calling our little incursion a deliberate act of provocation. The Russian ambassador left for Moscow about an hour ago. They're cleaning out the embassy as we speak. You can almost hear their shredders all the way down here. It's only a matter of time before China follows suit.
Have they increased their military readiness?
You could call it that. In the past 3 hours, we've seen more naval activity out of Russia than we have since the Cuban Missile Crisis. The entire Northern Fleet is on alert, so is most of the Pacific Fleet, from what we can tell. There are over 100 ships operating in the North Atlantic alone.
Submarines?
The Severodvinsk set to sea this morning, along with two Boré-class subs. The White Sea base looks like it was abandoned. There are 5 Delta IVs roaming around, just as many Delta IIIs, even their big old Typhoon. Basically, everything with a nuke that is seaworthy is now out there. We haven't seen any unusual action on the Chinese side, but I wouldn't be surprised if they sent out part of their fleet as well.
They're bluffing. You know that.
So are we. Bluffing doesn't mean what it used to. No one wants an all-out war, and everyone knows it. Both sides know the other doesn't want to fight, so we push each other against the wall a tiny bit further every time. It's all about saving face, but basically, we're playing chicken. And both sides think that they can do whatever they want because the other guy will never use its nuclear arsenal. It probably won't be today, but someday.
Someday, one of us is going to be terribly wrong. We deployed our attack subs, of course. If China steps in, we'll send even more ships to go against their ships. Our aircraft carriers are already on full alert. If we send them out anywhere in the general direction of Asia, they're going to launch everything they have and send it our way. You can see where this is going. Nothing good has ever come of a naval standoff. I know it looks big on the map, but an ocean can get crowded real fast. And I sure as hell don't like putting my fate in the hands of a dozen half-blind sub-captains trying not to bump into anything.
Do we really need to always respond in kind? Could we not simply do nothing and let the Russians posture for a few days? I never understood the merits of proportional response.
I'm not sure there are any. It's just what we call human nature for people with too much firepower in their hands. Ever been in a bar fight?
I assume this is a rhetorical question.
Well, that's how it starts. You bump into someone, make them spill their drink. They yell at you and push you away. You pretend that you apologize while you poke at their chest. Everybody proportionally responds until someone gets their teeth knocked out. No one really wants to fight, but no one wants to be the one to back off either. It's 100 times worse with military men, and 100 times more so with politicians. So we're going to do our thing, they're going to do their thing, and if we're really lucky, we won't send 20 million people to their deaths in the process.
We were all aware of the risks when we agreed on this course of action.
That's a pretty distorted way of looking at the situation, don't you think?
How so?
We didn't exactly agree on anything. You presented us with a fait accompli. You told us what you were doing after the fact, and you threatened—
Accompli.
What?
The expression is a fait accompli. It means done deed. Accompli is not even a word. I never understood why people use words they do not understand. I made my intentions abundantly clear when I asked for your assistance. You chose to help. You did not have to supply troops. You could have said no. You also had the means to stop me at any time. You could at any point have had me and every member of my team arrested, imprisoned, or even killed. Had you said nothing, it would have been the perfect example of a tacit agreement. But you went farther. And you set out certain conditions under which I would have the full support of this administration. I can understand your desire to distance yourself from this decision, given the current state of affairs, but you did make a choice. That choice will not cease to be yours because a lot of people might die as a result.
What about you? You're fine with that? The end justifies the means, is that it?
You make it sound as if I were irrational. Yes. I do think this particular end justifies considerable means. I draw the line somewhere like everyone else. I just draw it based on reason and not emotions.
So you'd let a few hundred people die? Would you stop for 1,000? How many lives are you willing to sacrifice for this? 1,000,000?
Certainly not. But 1,000 seems like a reasonable figure.
You're an asshole. You know that? Isn't that just a bit arbitrary?
Of course it is. Most things are. 8 people died while we raced the Soviets to the moon. Another 14 lost their lives in the Challenger and Columbia accidents. And yet the space program is still around. Space exploration is important enough to justify the death of 22 people. Had 22,000 people died, things might have been different. We lost about 300 soldiers liberating Kuwait. Most would think that was reasonable. Over 4,000 Americans died in Iraq. Some might say it was too high a price to get rid of Saddam Hussein. Some might not. Obviously, the administration thought that it was worth it at the time. Over 20 million soldiers died during World War II. 20 million in the military alone. There had to be a lot of people who believed that their particular end justified some unfathomable means. honestly believe that what we are doing is much more important than going to the moon or getting our hands on a few barrels of oil. In my opinion, it more readily compares with inventing the wheel or making fire. I realize that others might disagree. I wish I could tell you exactly how many lives this is worth losing, but I cannot. At some point, we might decide that we could live with 1,151 dead, but not 1,152. It is, by definition, arbitrary. What I can tell you is this. In an underground warehouse in Denver, there is definite proof that we are not alone in the universe. Undeniable evidence that there are civilizations literally thousands of years ahead of us technologically. And we are drawing closer to being able to use some of that knowledge. This can be a leap of monumental proportions for all mankind, and not just from a technological standpoint. This will change the way we think of the world, the way we see ourselves. This will reshape this planet. And we have an opportunity to help steer that change. How many lives is that worth to you?
Let's just hope no one else has to die, shall we? We could use some good news, and soon. Speaking of which, did you get that little mutiny of yours under control?
As a matter of fact, I did.
Good. The president is growing tired of all this. He's also heard about your little stunt at the hospital.
Exactly what nefarious deed of mine are you referring to this time?
You forced a doctor to put some crazy metal knees into the linguist. Did you think no one was going to find out?
Well, he needed knees.
That's not how the president sees it. Up to this point, he's been willing to overlook certain risks to the population, and he's given you a fair amount of leeway when it comes to international law. But you just crossed a line that wasn't meant to be crossed. You performed very risky, experimental is an understatement, body-altering surgery on an American citizen without his consent.
I apologize. I did not know that this was frowned upon.
This isn't funny.
It is somewhat funny. First of all, I did not perform anything. The doctor did. Second, Mr. Couture is not an American citizen. He is from Montreal. It is a large city, about the size of Boston, in that very large country just north of here. You may have heard of it. They play hockey.
That was just an expression.
American citizen is not an expression. Are you seriously telling me the president is unhappy because I did not let some doctor saw off our best chance of success? I can shoot Mr. Couture if need be, but he finds surgery morally reprehensible? It makes him uncomfortable, ill at ease? Tell the president we gave him really good knees. Better yet, tell him to give Mr. Couture a medal. That will make him feel better. If Mr. Couture survives, our chances of success will be significantly greater than they were before the surgery. May I also remind you that the alternative was to have a leg pilot without legs? There was a unique window of opportunity, and I took it. I would do it again without hesitation.
The next time you want to turn someone into the $6 million man, you should get his permission first. As far as the president is concerned, what you did is tantamount to torturing the guy.
I respectfully but vehemently disagree. You can tell the president whatever you want. He is your responsibility. Robert?
You know, the medal's not a bad idea.
I was being sarcastic. You cannot give... never mind. Yes. Give him a medal.
File number 141. Interview with Dr. Rose Franklin, Ph.D. Location, Underground Complex, Denver, Colorado.
Where's Kara? She didn't show up today.
On assignment. I wish I could tell you more, but she will be back in a few days. I heard you went away as well.
You don't miss much, do you? Yes, I went to visit Ryan.
I did not know he was allowed visitors.
He's not, but government psychiatrists are allowed, apparently.
They did not check your credentials?
The NSA never asked for my ID back. It says doctor on it.
I must say I am moderately surprised. This seems a bit out of character for you.
I don't know if I should be offended or flattered.
You should feel neither. I was merely pointing out that your recent behavior is uncharacteristic of your personal disposition. You are extremely brave, but also very rational and methodical. This seems somewhat rash, impulsive. These are words that more easily come to mind when speaking of Ms. Resnick.
She suggested it. She said you'd bail me out if I got into trouble.
I would not count on it.
Well, I couldn't just leave him alone out there. He had to know that people still cared about him. He seemed genuinely surprised to see me. He feels such shame over what he did, I don't think he expected anyone to show any concern over him. He says the worst part is that he remembers everything about that night. The hours before are either fuzzy or completely missing from his memory, but somehow the alcohol didn't erase a single detail about the crash. He can still see Vincent's face when the truck hit. I told him I would visit him again if he let me.
Mr. Couture is also very forgiving, considering. That seems to be a common trait in the scientific community. I assume Chief Resnick did not join you?
No, she didn't. But it's different for her. She feels responsible. And I wouldn't go so far as saying I forgive him. I think what he did is appalling. I also know everything he's been through. Surely you can understand that.
I understand that these are unusual circumstances, and that heightened emotions are to be expected. I understand that a strong feeling of attraction can easily develop in stressful situations, and that the associated loss can also be proportionally amplified. I also understand that under the same circumstances, you, Ms. Resnick, and Mr. Couture have not attempted to murder anyone. Mr. Mitchell tried to kill one of his co-workers, showed reckless disregard for the life of an army soldier, and jeopardized what could be the most significant endeavor in modern history. I believe I understand perfectly.
Maybe you're right. I just think that's not all he is. What he did, however horrifying, doesn't have to negate every other day of his life. He has a family, a mother that brought him into the world, fed him, bathed him. She dressed him for school. She drove him to soccer practice. You can't expect her to see this in black and white. She can't. Neither can I. I refuse to think of him in such simple terms. You thought he was good enough before. Well, before hasn't changed. Everything he did up until that day is still true. Ryan knows he didn't just hurt Vincent, that he left a whole lot of lives in shambles. He has to live with that. I think that's punishment enough.
Let us agree to disagree. I did not come here to discuss Mr. Mitchell, nor your emotional response to his current predicament. There were reports of an incident in the laboratory.
You could call it that. Work on the console has completely stopped without Vincent. Kara was getting restless having no one to train with. The lab feels really empty now that Alyssa's gone.
Where is Ms. Papantonio?
I thought you knew. Her work visa was revoked. Some technicality. She was sent back to Greece on Monday.
I am sorry to hear that. I heard she was a brilliant scientist.
She was. She had a hard time connecting with anyone, though. I don't think she had any friends here. I'll admit she was hard to deal with. She had really strong feelings about the way things should be done, but a lot of the progress we've made recently was based on her ideas.
I did not know that.
Yes. Since we found the second piece, all our attention has been focused on the robot itself. With Vincent unable to train, Alyssa suggested we take the opportunity to go back to the metal. We already know the parts activate in contact with radioactive material, but she wanted to know if it had anything to do with what they're made of. Anyway, now that it's just the two of us in the lab, I decided to have Kara help me run some experiments Alyssa had designed.
I am somewhat perplexed. Did you not perform a metallurgical analysis of the material early on?
I did, several times. Every piece is a solid block of metal, 89% iridium, 9.5% iron, 1.5% other heavy metals. I could go on about the physical properties of that alloy until morning, only nothing